Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by the Foundation at Hearst Castle, where donors and members experience exclusive events that recreate what it was like to be a guest of William Randolph Hearst, from swimming in the iconic Neptune Pool to dining in Hearst's private guesthouse overlooking the Pacific Ocean. The Foundation at Hearst Castle's ongoing mission is to support the conservation and restoration of Hearst Castle while offering youth programs for underserved students. Discover how you can become a member by going to foundation@hearstcastle.com and learn how you can support this unique and invaluable mission.
I'm your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting from the KCBX studios in San Luis Obispo, California. Mitch Massey, a legend on the Central Coast. Hi, Mitch.
Hello. Thank you for that introduction. I think anytime anyone wants to lose legacy or legend, that just means we've been hanging around for a while, haven't
exactly.
we, Tom?
Hang around long enough. Yeah.
Yes.
You outlive your competition, then you can rewrite the
exactly.
story.
That's right. And then you just become Hall of Fame status and come back. And as you were alluding to before we started recording this, is you will have conversations with people and all of a sudden you realize, oh, they're not quite old enough to remember.
Yep.
But tell you what, Tom, I will be old enough to remember everything you talk about.
There you go.
And if I don't, I'll make up a really good answer.
I love it. Okay, so I know you, even though I've never met you in person.
So what do you think?
Well, you've been a...
Who's more handsome, you or me?
We're live and in color. The only thing we're missing is a TV camera.
Yeah.
Because you were an on-air host on the Central Coast.
Yeah, for about 14 years at KSBY as a TV sportscaster, 82 to the end of 95.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, I went to Spokane, Washington.
Oh, wow.
For a beach kid to go to Spokane, Washington, it was, let's just say, a tad shocking. And one night going home from the studio, the wind chill factor was minus 22 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
I just said, I'm not on the Central Coast or Newport Beach where I was born and raised
Never.
Anymore. So, then to Seattle and San Francisco and ESPN West Coast correspondent. And
wow.
So it was quite the journey. Again, all before the internet. So people had to watch.
You could get it on TV antenna.
Yeah, you could do that. As I said, it basically came down to the point in early TV as well. You're either going to watch the one and only station, at least around here, that you could get with an antenna, or you're not going to watch TV at all. And so far, I stayed to at least the 51% that just wouldn't turn off the TV. Mm-hmm. And I say that all tongue in cheek.
Back to Spokane.
Yeah.
Back in the mid-70s, I worked on Kodiak on fish boats. Girlfriend lived in Eastern Washington.
Oh, my goodness.
And she tracked the weather, and it was always colder in Eastern Washington than in Kodiak, Alaska.
Well, that's nice to know, and I will agree with you wholeheartedly. As I said, it's like you go someplace that actually has four seasons, and to go through the winter aspect of that, then to be able to cover sports in Spokane, Washington State, in the Palouse in Pullman was a big centerpiece in which to cover. That's like a 70-mile drive. And when you drive the Palouse Highway in snowed-out conditions and you're trying to come back, it's like, wow, this is a lot of reality where you're driving, you can't see, but you're trying to. You just know it's kind of straight, and you see all these big lights coming at you, and it's like these trucks that have driven it so many times, and then it just kind of scares you because it's like these white-out conditions, but in this direction, it was truly white lights coming at you to be the white-out conditions.
Yeah. Well, living here in the Central Coast, as you well know, we can wake up in the end of October or November, and it would be the most beautiful summer day ever.
Yes.
Where we have a hard time discerning the seasons.
Yes.
And yet in the northern tier, you know almost to the day when fall arrives or when winter comes or when spring breaks.
Yes.
It's not so here at all.
We live in no reality. It is paradise.
Yeah. Rolling back in Mitch Massey's life, reading in from the outside, I imagine that sports came first in your life. That was a nurturing...
Yes.
Okay.
I was raised in Newport Beach, as I mentioned, and my father was a big USC football fan, and so was my grandfather. So there had been season tickets in our family up to this day, off and on over 100 years now. So that's kind of what I grew up with, but mm-hmm. also just the natural love to participate and play in sports. And so it always been a natural. And then listening to the USC games on the radio, as my late father would say, I said to him, basically probably around age 10, the way I understand the story, as he told it to me, is the voice that's coming out of the box. Mm-hmm. His name is Jim Kelly, the play-by-play announcer for USC at the time. And I always said, I want to talk out of that box one day.
Really?
And so as I evolved into my early teenage years, and my dad was a builder, I do these side jobs with him during the summer, and I would just imagine doing, you know, and do the play-by-play of sports all the time wherever I was. So if I'm pushing a broom in a big building and by myself, I'm doing, you know, the Lakers versus the Celtics and making things up as I go. Mm-hmm. So it's always been a first love. So when I knew I couldn't play for the Lakers, I had to fall back into my secondary direction. I'm a large or huge or whatever word you want to use, Lakers fan.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
So did you play sports in college?
Yeah, I played basketball through high school and college, and that's why I went to junior college up in Northern California, then went and played 1 year at USC. So basketball is just in my family, and I have two boys who are 29 and 26. They were basketball players mm-hmm. locally here, and so our common thread of constant communication just about 5 to 7 days a week is always sports related, because we're all very much that common ground of sport.
And what was yes. your major?
So journalism.
So you kind of knew that was your direction.
I knew, first of all, I wanted to talk on the radio. Mm-hmm. And then when you get into the journalism aspect, you learn how to write. And then there was this new thing called take a TV class. And so I took the TV class my second year at USC, and I said, isn't this fascinating? Because being, let's just call it ADHD, to be able to focus, I just will start talking. So to be able to recreate, and what really was the genesis to make that happen, was I was Bryant Gumbel's intern at KNBC in Los Angeles my junior year at USC.
Cool.
His history in the field of journalism and broadcasting speaks for itself, but I got the opportunity to just produce and do things and survive a lot of union grievances because I was working behind the scenes on things. But that really triggered it, and then he made a phone call for me to help get my first TV job at age 21
wow.
in Palm Springs.
Was Bryant Gumbel instrumental as a mentor to, or at least for you to subconsciously follow that model?
Well, just being around the environment, mm-hmm. it's kind of like, you know, you see these, let's say Steph Curry, who's a fabulous basketball player for the Warriors. His dad, Dell Curry, when the kids are growing up, they're just around the NBA and at practice, this and that. So a part of the environment, and part of that also was with Stu Nahan, who was another legend in LA broadcasting. So I was just kind of their intern, running and doing things and, you know, hey, do you want to go to the All-Star game with us in Anaheim and just go up and meet people and just kind of stand by their side? So I was in the environment to see what it was like. And then as all of us who don't have quite the wisdom yet would think, oh, they're in LA, I'll just go do this for a year in Palm Springs and be in LA. Mm-hmm. Well, it doesn't quite work that way, you know?
So when you went to Palm Springs, it was to do what?
As a TV sportscaster.
On air.
Yeah. And the fellow who I replaced there, his name was Dave Silver. So this is, we're talking 81 and 82. And Dave Silver was a sportscaster here at KSBY. Uh-huh. So when he decided to take a job in Tucson, where he stayed for over 30 years, he called me up and says, hey, I'm leaving. Maybe you'll want this gig. So I called, and that's how I got to San Luis Obispo, wow. flying in, never being here before. And I said, what a small little town. Mm-hmm. And then it just about a year into it totally captured, this is really very innocent and very cool. And I stayed here about 14 years.
Yeah, the longer you're here, the more you appreciate it.
Oh, my goodness.
You come back and you're going, wow, no gridlock.
No, and I've gone away twice, and I found my way back here
twice. Where did you go when you went away?
Well, the first time was TV, so going out. So then coming back, and the transition of life out of broadcasting was, first of all, working with Copeland Sports for about 3 months, helping do the business development for the superstores in Las Vegas at the time. And then I met the president of Heritage Oaks Bank, And, hey, we want to – you understand marketing, you understand relationships. And he offered me a marketing job. And 14 years later, my fundamental base is really in financial institutions, mm-hmm. and was a top executive for them. Great run. It was about a $50 million bank in assets when I joined, multi-billion when I left. So when you go through all and become publicly traded and you go through all of those transitions, transformations, mm-hmm. it really became the fundamental of learning and doing what I do to this day. So it was my master's program in business.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So when the lights went off in the studio, that's when you switched gears.
And, in a way, Tom, and thank you for all the questions, because they always say, well, what's the subject matter we all know better than anything else? Ourselves. So I don't think I'm making any of this up. So what was really neat is when I came back, KSBY hired me to play a role and help host their Friday night football shows.
Oh, cool.
And so I'm working at the bank. Then on Friday night, I'm covering high school football, doing all these live shots. Mm-hmm. And then after that, then KCOY hired me. So I got to stay in the sports vernacular locally for about another, you know, 6+ years, which my boys actually got to see. So this is what you do, Dad. And so they went along on these football shows on Fridays to really see. And that was really just a very mm-hmm. priceless time. Yeah. In life. So I'm doing the banking, and then the bank allowed me to, mm-hmm. yeah, you can do these Friday football shows, and that's always the first love. There is nothing better in all the sports that I have had the blessing in which to cover. Friday high school football, see the lights, because in this Central Coast area, it's not team versus team, it's city versus city. Yeah. So you take Paso Robles and Atascadero, okay, don't blend them together. They have their own legacies and very proud of. And then I think one of the coolest things on the Central Coast to see is at Templeton High School, you're driving on the freeway and you see the lights off the freeway and just high school football is going on. It just takes you back to like the 50s is kind of that feel. So moments like that.
Yeah, in small town America,
yes.
The town shut down.
Yes.
Literally for Friday night football, man.
I remember, Tom, in Spokane, Washington, there's a thing called the B basketball tournament. I mean, really small communities in the eastern part of the state. And these communities, we're talking probably 200 people. And so when their high school basketball team would come to Spokane, which is the big city, their towns literally would travel with them. It was a scene out of Hoosiers. And it was just fascinating. You'd have teams from Indian reservations. So all the diversity and all the cultures that would come from all these little towns that, hey, mm-hmm. the town comes and supports them was really a fun experience.
It's interesting, too, because I covered a lot of AAA and AA baseball around America.
Whereabouts?
Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Virginia. I mean, just all over the place. And it's so touching.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything more viral community engagement than the minor league baseball teams, because they're the town's team, just like the local small town high school football team.
Yeah.
You know, the supporters and the boosters. I mean, that's their life.
Well, it is, and it's a period of time where it's almost like Groundhog's Day. And each year, the seniors, that's going to be their time. So the uniforms look the same, but the experiences to be able to shine is you only get this one year being a senior and playing a particular sport, and it just continues to be a moment in time, and everyone gets their time. And so that innocence of like being the big kid on campus mm-hmm. is just priceless. Yeah.
That still goes on today.
It does.
You know, and that's yeah. just one of the last vestiges of that old
yeah.
familial Americana.
Yes. You know. I agree, and well said. I just, when you talk about the minor league teams, first thing I always think of in sport is like, okay, the P.T. Barnum in life. You know, you put together these shows and this and that, and minor league baseball, there's a minor league team in the South called the Bananas. They do so many goofy things, but yet you can get away with it in a minor league. You can have the fun in games,
yeah.
but it's just a fun place to go, and we have a small version of that with the San Luis Blues
yeah,
here. You
yeah.
just go and have fun. It's yeah. all family.
And the other cool thing about some of these minor league teams, you know, they're affiliated with the majors, right?
Yes.
So you have somebody that gets injured or whatever and they have to step down. So they're playing with this small local minor league team for a while. And the local people just go ballistic.
Yes.
Attendance skyrockets. And
remember when Michael Jordan played minor league baseball, and it's like, I mean, what it did, but these rehab assignments that major league baseball players go through. So let's say being a Dodgers fan, Clayton Kershaw has to go down to AAA to do a rehab start. All of a sudden it's like, wow, a celebrity star is coming in. And it's right. So as I said, it is the true spirit of community, and you just kind of have fun. It's the family environment. It's the fireworks show. It's so many different things, but it all just kind of is constant entertainment for the entire family.
Oh, yeah, totally. And their halftime, the things they do with the kids will just bring you to tears, man. They're so cute.
Yes. Yeah. You know, it would be fun for me just to reverse this role and interview you because Tom, your life's work, you know, going and walking into the studio and seeing the Wall of Fame and all the different things that you've had.
Yeah.
And I can say, well, you're a legend, you know, and it just.
I was at a party in Paso and these women go, "We know you. Well, we know your voice."
Yes,
you
know, exactly.
"But nobody knows what I look like."
Yeah. Yep. He lives the part. And he looks the part. He's a traveler.
Well, on radio, they call it a face made for radio.
Okay. Well, you have history written all over you.
So I've never done TV.
Why?
Never. I don't know. Just the way it worked.
Yeah.
We actually did, with a video partner, we did a pilot season for a TV series.
Yeah.
Travel. And one of the funniest things, I looked like a bobblehead on air. Because in radio, I'm trained. You notice I don't go, What I do, I nod my head. So you're looking at the outtakes, and here's me bobbleheading.
Got it. Well said.
I go, "Dude, this is not working."
I have this great sports bobblehead collection. And what I think is always fun to do is, okay, you're having maybe a little bit of anxiety. I hit the bobbleheads from behind, and they start talking to me. So if I take my left or right hand and kind of, please don't take it as something, "Oh, he wants to fight." No, I just think, "Hey, you're a bobblehead. You just said it." Yes.
I love it.
Yeah.
Okay. Again, post on air, you went corporate.
And a big part of it was we wanted to raise, my wife at the time, we wanted to raise our kids here. And anyone who gets that experience, what a fabulous place in which to do it. So that was a big reason we wanted to get back to San Luis Obispo. Mm-hmm. Wasn't sure what was. I was doing contract work with ESPN, living in the East Bay and covering the Western U.S. for them. Again, all before the internet. So, hey, can you go cover something in Washington? So you go up there, something down in San Diego. So the entire West Coast.
So you're doing on live color?
Doing live reports or recorded reports. Mm-hmm. And this is, again, in the
interviewing
late 90s.
Players?
Yeah, exactly. Or, so if they want to do, hey, let's do stuff on college football. Okay, go down to L.A., talk to USC and UCLA, do the story, and then submit the story back so ESPN can air it. So I was their West Coast correspondent, and I would go wherever they'd want. Hey, we need a Dodgers story, or we need a Padres story, whatever it might be, something on the Niners, go do that. Okay, to go to the Niners, and all of a sudden you get to play catch with Joe Montana and Jerry Rice.
Any outstanding takeaways, memorable moments from random interaction with different players?
I think the most enjoyable, I grew up, as I mentioned, a basketball fan, and my all-time idol is Jerry West. And so in my first TV job, the Lakers would train basically about 100 yards away from where the TV station is because they were at College of the Desert, and the station was literally across the street.
Wow.
So one day I'd asked Jerry West, you know, "Hey, could I play you one-on-one in basketball and we'll videotape it?" So Chick Hearn did the play-by-play. Kareem was his coach.
Wow.
And we played to 5-by-1s. I had him down 4-2, and then he got really serious. And let's just say that what I vividly remember, he called timeout. He went over to Kareem, and then he stepped right inside the baseline, which would be about a 27-footer. No three-point line at the time. He just drained a long shot, and I lost 5-4. Oh. But to this day,
did you realize what a legend that Kareem was at that point in time?
I just realized he was really, really tall. you know, and this is, you know, this is back when magic is literally a rookie, and you just think, well, this must be it. And then, you know, Jimmy Connors, tennis, and folks would come through, Arnold Palmer for golf. And again, I'm 21 years old, and I just think, oh, this just must be the way it is. When you look back on it, the true legend and legacy of it all, and what I have to this day that hangs up in my office at Hearst Castle is my Muhammad Ali boxing gloves. Well, Muhammad Ali had just retired. He came down with Howard Cosell, and they were doing this fundraiser. So he said, hey, let's just have some fun, his handlers, and let's get in the ring. And here's some gloves of his, which were his sparring gloves from when he took on Jerry Quarry. And so we're kind of doing this thing in the, inside the ring. And then he just said, hey, you can just have these.
Wow.
And I've had them. It's things like that. And the Angels would train down there. So with Reggie Jackson and Rod Carew and that whole group at that time, these are just, isn't this just the way it is? So you couldn't appreciate it. And then all of a sudden, you spend many more years of wisdom to understand TV, where you're asking a guy to wear makeup to work. So you tell me if it's dysfunctional or not. But it's just, wow, what a moment in time. And I wasn't old enough to realize playing tennis with Jimmy Connors. And we both had wireless mics on. And I'm talking to him about the upcoming tennis tournament at Indian Wells before that really took off. Just, this must be the way it is. No, it's it sure isn't. It sure isn't.
But so for precious legacy looking back on your life.
Yeah.
And things that you just took for granted.
Yes. You know, and then when Magic Johnson just retired and he's coming to UCSB, and I said, hey, you want to play one-on-one in basketball? And I was like, yeah, you do that. Lost that too. But it just the experience of what it is. But it's just because you're in the environment. So to take that, and I said, okay, how do you spin that into something that would take the viewership here and let them be the total focus? So I created this thing called Sports Challenge for 6 years, which I think is the true legacy of my TV experience. Is people would write in, again, before the internet, write in, hey, I want to challenge you to this. And so one example is barefoot water skiing. I'd never water skied a day in my life. So we went up to Lake Nacimiento, and the guy put me out on the boom, and we did barefoot water skiing. It just, oh, and then it got syndicated to ESPN and ABC.
Wow.
But I had no idea at the time what it was. But when you take the premise of that, Tom, and you say, okay, I'm really good at, it could be any sport or horseback riding.
Right.
Okay, I'm going to challenge Mitch to this. And I have no idea what I'm doing, but that was most of the fun. And so when I did horse jumping, it's like, oh, my horses, I kind of am afraid of. So then I did horse jumping. Oh, my gosh, how do you do this? And so in the very natural setting, and then the folks who were really good at it, then they got to be the stars. So, you know, it's like 3 minutes of letting them have their 15 minutes of fame.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was just something that was.
What was the most humbling thing that you did?
I think it was Gibraltar Peak in Santa Barbara, where they said, you know, I want to do rock climbing. I'm terrified of heights. And all of a sudden we're up there and they have it all hooked and I have to look down. I mean, it's at least 500 feet straight down at one point. And to do that, but within all of this, you have a photographer that's with you who was far braver than I ever was in many of these different instances. But that one was just looking down and seeing what it was and never looking down and thinking, well, I guess if this is going to be it, we'll have it on tape. But I never jumped out of planes, but I think everything just short of that happened. So,
and what was the coolest, kind of an epiphanous experience?
It would have to be the basketball ones, where then, like, for example, Brian Shaw played at UCSB, who went on to, you know, play for the Lakers, have a nice NBA career. I did beat him in a three-point shooting contest.
Wow.
You know, I promote that. And what I'm talking about, folks, this is back in like 1989, 90. When the day is said and done with all of this, is to be able to be a messenger for so many experiences of youth that participate and play, when they come back and they say, hey, they might not remember what the final score is, a lot of things, but they'll remember the experience, and to be able to do highlights of the time, again, before the internet, that they get to hang on to, or they were interviewed by, you know, a local TV person, and they have that for the rest of their lives. So you get to play a role in that celebrity moment in their life.
Is there a book, a Mitch Massey book, in your future? You have to have thought about that.
I have thought for many a year. So you want to get in broadcasting, and you open it up, and I just say don't. I haven't thought of any other words, but the only reason being is it's an entertainment business.
Your life journey as a book would be awesome.
That's nice of you to say. I so enjoy talking with everyone, and there's only strangers because you haven't met him yet.
Yep.
If I sit here and I start talking to you about your life steps, everyone is a great book, and it's a matter of just listen to understand it. And if people would trigger something that inspires or is of goodwill, we all have numerous chapters. I just think my book is more of a pop-up book than a written book, mm-hmm. but I say that in all fun. But we all are, and where does it say that it's going to be something that someone wants to read? I have no idea, but
I'm ready to read it.
You're ready to read it? Well, if there's anything left after this interview, I'll write something.
Well, do you have an archive of photos and stuff that accompany your life?
Yes, yeah. There would be a lot of that. There's videotapes. But again, when you break this all down, mm-hmm. for whatever we are professionally, the underlining most important aspect of all of it, I'm a father of two boys, and mm-hmm. it will keep coming back to that. Okay, I played this professional chapter, but I want to talk to you about the experiences that I've lived with my boys. Okay, I lived this experience. How did my boys come along with that, and what are the roles in their life? And one of the greatest things is I got to be their coach at different times as basketball players. Mm-hmm. I will say at times they may have had choice words for their coach / father, but at the same time, it's all part of the dynamics that once you step away from it, you can say, wow, that's truly once in a lifetime.
Yeah.
But you're caught up in so much emotion at the time mm-hmm. that we don't realize it until we step away from it, how valuable it was, because all we know is that moment in time.
Do the kids kind of have that same journey where they look back and now appreciate how mean the coach was?
Well, I think they know that Dad likes to hug him all the time. Mm-hmm. And I think what they have lived, especially the younger one, because he has stayed here and he's in real estate, is a lot of relationships that were mine and he was too young to realize. He is in different environments and, oh, yes, I knew your dad. And so he gets that experience. Every story he's ever told me is positive. And I said, if they're not, well, I didn't mean it intentionally if something had happened. And then his basketball players, many of them would be the sons of fathers that I covered.
Wow.
You know, so it goes full circle. And mm-hmm. so they're fun stories because when we all think back, who's going to remember? We embellish. I don't know, but they make for fun stories.
Yeah.
There was someone yesterday, a couple of days ago, Tom moved in next door, and he said, hey, you won't remember me, but I played on the 1986 San Luis Obispo Tigers basketball team. Oh, with Jim Vager, and I just start going right back to this. And so we start talking about, oh, you played with so-and-so, so-and-so. So the memory is still there to remember players and experiences. Mm-hmm. But that is the conduit to what I was just mentioning earlier, is that we get to play a role in someone's life. They, let's say, grow up here. They remember what it was. And he says, hey, do you remember when you interviewed me, this and that? And I said, honestly, don't. But he remembers, still has mm-hmm. it. Their basketball team is very good. And so the experiences are there. But to be able to have that kind of conversation is, that's the book.
Right.
That's the book.
Yeah. And in their world, like you said, that's their senior year.
Yes.
That's this pinnacle in their life.
Yes.
So, of course, they're going to remember every nuance.
Yes. Yes.
So, unfortunately, Mitch, we're out of time.
Are we?
Which means that we have to do part two.
Oh, part two.
Yeah. And so when you come back, we're going to be talking about your book project.
Oh, the book project. Okay. Very good. Well, you can be the ghostwriter.
There you go.
Excellent.
Mitch Massey, thank you so much.
Thank you, Tom. As I said, what I take away from this, you are a real-life bobblehead. You said it. I'm just going with it, okay?
Is there a way for somebody to follow you? Do you have Facebook?
Facebook.
How would somebody connect with you?
Mitch Massey. Real simple. I think there are no strangers in life, so anyone who would just like to think that it's a fascinating journey, you will see a lot of an English bulldog named Big Boy, who's 6 and a half, and he is just the true character of life, and everyone wants to talk with him. I just go along with him.
And where do you live on the Central Coast now?
I live from where this studio is, about 2 miles, right in downtown San Luis Obispo.
Oh, nice.
We just moved into a nice 1950s home about 3 months ago. It is just a fabulous chapter to come back and be part after being away for about the last 2 years.
Love it. Mitch Massey, thanks again.
Thank you, Tom.
I'm your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting from the KCBX studios in San Luis Obispo.
Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by the Foundation at Hearst Castle, where donors and members experience exclusive events that recreate what it was like to be a guest of William Randolph Hearst, from swimming in the iconic Neptune Pool to dining in Hearst's private guest house overlooking the Pacific Ocean. The Foundation at Hearst Castle's ongoing mission is to support the conservation and restoration of Hearst Castle while offering youth programs for underserved students, preserving the past and inspiring future generations of dreamers. These children experience a world of science, technology, engineering, art, and math at Hearst Castle, STEAM, along with studying the legacy of Julia Morgan, one of the most important women in the history of engineering and architecture. The Foundation at Hearst Castle not only changes the lives of children, but also provides lifetime memories and unrivaled experiences for our generous donors and members. Discover how you can become a member by going to foundationathearstcastle.com and learn how you can support this unique and invaluable mission. You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
This is Roseanne Cash, and I'm sitting here with Tom Wilmer. Please support your local NPR station. I listen to WNYC in New York, and if I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.